announcing the What is RevOps Handbook, the only guide you will need to learn how to accelerate your sales cycle, improve win rates, and create a predictable revenue model. Learn how to establish a revenue operations team, grow a revenue machine, and how to measure success, all within the What is RevOps Handbook. Head to evster.com/what-is-revops or click the link in the description below to grab your copy today. This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales ops onto the show to deconstruct the what, why, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by EBSA, a revenue intelligence platform used to identify risk in the pipeline and score customer engagement, and is sponsored by the Global Sales Operations Association and the UK Revenue Operations Network. Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Today, we're joined by Chris Fezzer. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you having me.
And my pleasure entirely. And the reason I am so happy that you're here is that ever since we started, I've been asking guests about the importance of being a Salesforce admin or having a Salesforce admin in the sales ops team. Now, I know that you have pretty extensive experience here. Currently, the founder, I believe, of Admin Within, which is a sales ops as a service / sales ops consultancy, which I do believe includes some technical Salesforce stuff. So, Chris, that's one of the things I want to cover today. But before that, I'd like to go back a few years, and I understand that you studied psychology. And so my first question is, how, if at all, has it helped you in your career in sales operations?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's a bit of an interesting transition to go from psychology to sales ops and trying to figure out, how those two kind of connect at all. I think that I was always very interested in psychology because I think when I started taking the courses, it explained a lot about just how people's minds work, how they go through kind of consideration, decision-making process, what makes people really tick. And so I found the studies very interesting overall. My sort of thesis and specialty in my major was in clinical psychology. And so I had a chance to, as part of my thesis, run a clinical trial, which exposed me to, statistics, like more of the scientific method and, things that go along with sort of running effective scientific tests or trials. I think that's kind of where it parallels to, sales ops, the kind of the data analysis side of things, drawing conclusions from the data, how to make sure that you're running kind of an effective and appropriate test and that sort of thing. So maybe not, connected on the surface, I think that kind of the interest in the analytics part of psychology actually sort of led me in this path too. Plus I was, a little bit concerned about like my career. If I went forward as a psychologist, I just thought it would be potentially a little bit like depressing day to day, listening to a lot of people's problems, even though, obviously you're ideally helping them, just wasn't really the path that I wanted to pursue.
It totally makes sense. You're saying that the psychology degree or the scientific part of it gave you the awareness of the scientific method, which is very important if you're running tests or analyzing data within a sales or from a sales team.
Exactly.
Cool. Awesome. And then on to the next subject that I was alluding to, the importance of either being a Salesforce admin or having a Salesforce admin in the team. When did you get that qualification and how critical do you think it is?
Sure. Yeah, I think that it's something that I picked up. So I started off, as a research analyst, and was in more of a kind of pure analyst role. And I think that what happened was shortly after I moved into sales ops, I was using Salesforce a lot because Salesforce is kind of the main CRM for the company I was at, Living Social. And the reality was that, like, I was looking at, so many reports and creating reports and thinking like, oh, it'd be great to, just add a formula here and a formula there so I can get more of this into Salesforce rather than pulling it out and transforming it into Excel. And so I kind of, got into it really from a reporting perspective originally, and was lucky to kind of have some folks that were within the Salesforce admin, CRM team that would both give me access to do that as well as kind of mentoring on a few of the questions I had as I went along. And so just kind of got hands-on with it from a more of a reporting needs perspective. And then, from there, just kind of kept rolling, really.
Cool. And then today, we'll talk more about this at the end, but at Admin Within, how much of the services or strategy you provide is focused on that more technical area?
Yeah, probably actually about 70%. So it definitely depends project to project, but I think in a lot of cases, companies that we're working with, it can kind of, the spectrum can vary from companies that have no sales ops yet because they're either kind of just starting to grow the sales team, growing out the function. Maybe they don't need a full-time hire yet, but they need some type of support. And a lot of companies are smart. Maybe they've raised some money and they want to be able to kind of invest in building things out the right way, not, making the same mistakes that so many other companies have as they were growing and building. So it depends. Certain projects, it could be just mostly kind of tools and technology, getting the sales RevOps tech stack up and running. In others, generally, kind of when the business is a little bit more established, maybe a little bit bigger sales team, they may have some needs around, using us for help with annual planning cycles, running some of their sales analytics, creating a weekly or monthly sort of executive KPI deck or readout, that sort of thing. But I think actually probably about 70% of the work is more on the kind of Salesforce technical side. And so we are a Salesforce registered partner as well.
Makes sense. Now, whilst you were a sales ops analyst / manager at a business called MetaLogix, I believe you guys acquired a number of other, software companies. A, how was that experience from a sales ops perspective? And what do other sales ops teams or leaders need to be aware of when going through these kinds of acquisitions?
Yeah. Yeah, I was really lucky to have that experience. I think there were three acquisitions that occurred while I was there. And they were of varying sizes. So one was like really acquisition of almost a full another company. Another was an acquisition of just like a product set from a company. So there's, are you acquiring products? Are you acquiring people or both? And I think that, from a sales ops perspective, it's when you're acquiring the whole company, sort of products and people, there's a lot more planning that has to go into that because you're looking at how does the, especially the sales team fit in with the kind of existing sales team? Are we going to have a double coverage or dual selling model in the beginning, 6 months or 2 years, something like that? And then are we going to then, sort of recut or redivide the territories accordingly? Does this, are we getting folks that have specific experience or talent, in the company we're acquiring that we don't have in-house? Sometimes, just as much as the products itself, like the people that you're getting as part of the acquisition can be a great benefit. And so there's like, there's some kind of things like, what are we doing today that's really good? What are we going to pick up or learn from the company that we're acquiring? And how do we incorporate those two together? And so that's like, not just how do we kind of carve up territories, how do we sell the products, but also like, is there a sales strategy that's working really well in terms of their you know, cold outreach approach, or their ability to drive inbound, you know, demand on the marketing side. So kind of like the best thing is you get to really take the best of both worlds in an acquisition. And so kind of planning accordingly, you know, to take advantage of that, I think is really important. On the more technical side, you know, those acquisitions usually come with an existing customer base, an existing data set, an existing CRM. And so, you know, making the decision too of like, are we going to keep our existing CRM and bring the company's data into it? Or is their CRM actually set up in a better place than ours is, and we're going to move and use their CRM overall? And so that kind of, that's a something that we had to decide for one of the acquisitions. And you kind of go through and look at the way that both CRMs are set up and really kind of go through like a pros and cons, you know, type of thing, almost as if you were evaluating like buying new tool completely and looking across, you know, multiple options. You're going to look across both of these CRMs and say, hey, what do they do really well, each of them, and kind of make your decision accordingly, you know, taking into account things like what's the workflow like on the sales side of things. What are the integrations that are already set up? You might have integrations between, you know, Salesforce and an ERP or marketing automation platform that you want to keep up and running. And then, you know, also like what's the historical data migration going to look like to bring over all the kind of the existing customers, existing pipeline, and that sort of thing. But that's actually usually a lesser consideration versus like integrations and workflow that are already set up in the CRM.
So it seems like one of the crucial parts of acquiring is actually having an honest assessment of the capabilities and also the processes and CRM of both parties, and then choosing the one that is actually which is objectively the best, even though you might be emotionally thinking that your inbound lead generation strategy is better. So that's the sounds like the crucial part. But keeping with the CRM theme, I think the next role from that TravelClick, you managed a migration to Salesforce Lightning for approximately 1,000 users. For anybody listening who is about to go through a Lightning migration, I think there still is people out there. What is like the number one thing to consider whilst doing that?
I think the biggest thing to consider is, how can you make the migration bring benefits to your end users? So, I mean, you know, a lot of people think about Lightning migration as like something that we have to do. You know, at some point, Salesforce is, I think about a year or two ago, Salesforce really stopped putting out new features on Classic, and everything new is coming to Lightning. So you're spending, you know, all this money every year for your SaaS subscription with Salesforce, and if you're not on Lightning, you're basically getting, you know, none of the new and improvement features that they're delivering. So some companies think about like, oh, we just kind of have to do this. Salesforce is forcing us to do this, in effect. But I think that it's also like, you want to think about it through the benefits. So if I've got a customer service team that's on Salesforce, you know, what are the kind of new features that Lightning will unlock? What are the ways that we can improve their existing workflow to, you know, shave time off their ticket resolution, maybe use something like the Lightning record page layout flexibility to surface related records all on one screen, so that the customer service agents don't have to go through three or four different pages for each case that they're working. Things like that and bringing those benefits to light really helps, I think, make the migration a positive thing rather than just a drain on business resources to do the migration, as well as a, you know, drain on the team for just the change management of learning a new platform. I think that it's hard because a lot of organizations want to just say, hey, what's like the minimum we need to do to be compatible in Lightning and make the shift? But I think if you do go that step further and then think and really kind of try to deliver benefits through the change, it will be more reasonably well adopted.
Makes total sense, both to like get more from the migration, but also to help market the migration or even push the migration through. So that makes total sense. Now up to today with the work at admin within, what do you think from all the sales ops functions that you've dove into in the past 2 years, What do you think is the number one opportunity for a sales ops team or leader going into 2021?
Number one opportunity. I think that it was sort of at this interesting inflection point right now where the average sales team uses a lot of different tools. I think that in most organizations that are sort of tech friendly, and especially like kind of SaaS type businesses that we work with frequently, the sales team might use kind of up to 10 tools in their tech stack at any given time, which is a lot. And, you know, there's always going to be some, you add an additional tool because it brings some additional benefit, or it's the best at X specific thing. But I think that the, sales ops organizations need to think about like sort of the tool switching, context switching, efficiencies that are lost, and try to think about for their teams, how can they kind of streamline their workflow and platforms, strip out things that are really not bringing positive ROI to the team, or think about, a different way to potentially better integrate them to just make that workflow a little bit more seamless for folks.
I guess conventional wisdom is that more tech, the better, if it's within the budget. But what you're actually saying is there is a downside to having more tech.
Yeah, I think there can be for sure. I mean, certainly to, to maintain it, but also, just in terms of like getting people able to ramp up on all the tech that they have to use for their position. And really just kind of day-to-day ongoing management of it. I think it's, for organizations that are like a little bit more mature and do have a lot of tech, I think they kind of, it's a good process to go through sort of an annual reassessment of, are we really seeing the benefits we thought we would from each tool that we're using?
Sure. Then again, looking forward to 2021, I assume you've had some exposure to a forecasting process for next year. What can sales ops teams do to forecast effectively next year, especially where their forecast may have been completely ripped to shreds in 2020?
Yeah. I think I'll be candid, 2020, I think, took everyone by surprise overall. And so it's a little bit hard to know what 2021 is going to bring. Hopefully, more stability from a business perspective. But I think that it really kind of comes down to, the fundamentals of how you look at, what's the health of a deal, the health of a prospect, or even the health of a customer from a renewals perspective overall. And just making sure that, as you should have probably been doing before, you're kind of staying on top of those metrics. So you've got a thorough understanding of who the decision makers are in any deal, that you've got them involved, that you're seeing like kind of the regular touch points that you would throughout the sales cycle, and just that you're kind of constantly staying on top of that pipeline. I think it's you're no longer safe to assume that because you had a great conversation 2 weeks ago that your prospect is discussing it internally and working on their approvals. Things might be changing a lot more rapidly than they were before, and things deals can certainly make it right up to the finish line and then get yanked because of a variety of reasons. I think it's really important to just more than ever kind of stay on top of the deals and really look for those kind of specific activities and indicators. Everything, again, stuff that we kind of preach generally, like having really well-defined explicit next steps, having a check-in cadence pretty regularly on the deals, and then making sure that we're probably being just a little bit more cautious in the forecast overall, not sandbagging, but
so essentially more diligence and potentially more caution in the forecast in order to ensure its accuracy for next year. Now, Chris, the most important question of the episode: who in the world of sales ops would you most like to take for lunch?
It's a good question. There's a lot of folks out there, and I feel like I've been a part of this this great Slack community for the past few months called WizOps, Wizards of Ops, and started by the folks at Sonar. And it's really kind of been great to see just like what the, you know, the ops specific community looks like. So I think that, you know, we've chatted over Zoom plenty of times, but I definitely would want to take Brad Smith from Sonar out to lunch. And I think he's a very like-minded guy and would be fun to meet in person.
I think we've had a couple of people have said Brad, and I have heard of WithOps. It's a great name for a community. But yeah, we will, I think we're going to have to try and reach out to Brad to try and get him on the show.
You should.
Chris, thank you so much. People, I guess, can just Google admin within if they want to find out more about you or the business. Is that the best way for people to find out?
Yeah, just adminwithin.com or look me up on LinkedIn.
Amazing. So I think the thing that we covered in this episode that I don't think we've covered that well before out of all previous 145 episodes, I think, is the acquisition piece. So I think that's how we're going to lead with this episode. I think it's that your thoughts specifically on the analysis of the thing you're acquiring and also your things, and then choosing the best as opposed to just thinking that yours are the best and then just consuming their things, e.g. their processes, et cetera, CRM structure into yours, because that might not actually be the best way to do it. So Chris, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.